Today, we are going to open our Bibles to the book of Daniel, chapter number 7. Because we are kind of wrapping up the big prophets of the time of the exile. Jeremiah, we finished yesterday. Ezekiel, we pretty much wrapped up already as well. And now Daniel is the other one that was very active as the Jewish kingdom was coming to an end and the people were going into exile. And so he is actually going to bridge right up to the time of the return. Now, we were closing yesterday by talking about some of the historical changes that happened during this time period. Nebuchadnezzar dies. His son Amel-Marduk becomes the new king, but he only is on the throne for a couple of years before he's assassinated by his brother-in-law, who then seizes the throne. That brother-in-law doesn't last too long before he is gone, but his son is next put forward for the throne. But that doesn't go over well, and eventually we settle down with a man by the name of Nabonidus. He is the son-in-law of King Nebuchadnezzar. He had married one of his daughters. That means that he was the brother-in-law of the recently assassinated Amel-Marduk. And so, together, that was enough of an authority connection that the people backed Nabonidus becoming the new king of kings within Babylon. But this is what we know about him. He didn't seem to be all that interested in hanging around Babylon city and administering things. Partly he needed to go out and take care of the borderlands, to deal with problems along the edges of the empire. And sometimes he had to go and deal with uprisings inside the interior. But he also seemed to enjoy digging around in ancient ruins. You almost get the impression that he was what we would call a budding amateur archaeologist. Now, he was doing it not for historical sake, but because he was interested in the worship of gods and goddesses. And so he started spending more and more time away from the capital city. And he put his heir, his son, in a position of authority. He basically gave him second place in the kingdom. That son's name was Belshazzar. And so when we open the book of Daniel to chapter number 7, we read, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon." Now, when this is written, he has not technically become king because his father, Nabonidus, is still alive. And in fact, Belshazzar will die before his father whenever the Persians, the Medes, take over the kingdom of Babylon. So there is some sort of overlap that happens in the kingdom here. Now, in the story we're about to tell, Belshazzar will offer to Daniel a position of high authority that's referred to as the third place in the kingdom. And the reason he offers the third place is because, as we know, Belshazzar is actually occupying the second place because of his absentee father. Now, the date of this vision, we can't pin it down because the Babylonian records don't really give a first year of when Belshazzar was functioning as the number two king. But it's approximated somewhere around 549, 548 BC. So somewhere in that range, which means that Nabonidus has been on the throne for about 7 or so years by now. And furthermore, that Daniel has been in exile for 57 or so years. That means that he must be pushing 80 by now. And it's the 39th year since Jerusalem was destroyed. 39th or 40th year since Jerusalem was destroyed. And so take all of that into account for the background of this story. So in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. So here he is, coming pretty close to 80 years of age, and he dreams a prophetic dream. And then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. And then here comes his direct testimony. Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea." Now, in the ancient terminology, the great sea was a reference to the Mediterranean. And the Babylonian Empire surrounded the eastern end of the Mediterranean. And so that's probably the connection. "And four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another." So Daniel sees animals coming up out of the stirred up surf. So it's quite the dream. And then he describes them. And we're going to just describe them right now. Then we'll come back and talk about their interpretation later. "The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings." Now, that was not an uncommon image for the Babylonians, so he wouldn't have been surprised of seeing that. It was inscribed on the gates of Babylon City. It was an image associated with Ishtar, or Ashtoreth, the goddess of fertility and grain and families. She had winged lions always associated with her. So then, this is what he says next. "As I looked, its wings were plucked off. And as it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it." So this winged lion gets its wings clipped. And then it's made to stand up like it's a human being. That's a pretty strange thing to see, isn't it? Verse 5. "Behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear." And now bears were common to the Middle East. Brown bears, larger brown bears, like we call grizzlies, were common in the mountains in the eastern part of the Babylonian Empire. "It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And it was told, 'Arise, devour much flesh.'" So another strange thing to see. A bear, which is kind of lopsided. It's raised up on one side and it's got 3 ribs in its mouth. And it's told, "Come on, get some meat. Eat this flesh." And then the dream continues. "After this I looked, and behold, another like a leopard with 4 wings as of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it." So now that's a pretty strange beast by itself, a four-headed leopard with 4 wings. "After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong." Now, this is the one that actually scares Daniel the most. And he makes that clear as his vision progresses. This beast is not described here as a dragon, but in other places it is. And so that's how I think I would picture it in my mind. And the Babylonians had lots of pictures of dragons in their iconography, in their imagery, because their god Marduk had a pet dragon. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So this beast was unlike the other three. And it was having a fit. And it was making a big mess with its feet. But then Daniel notices on its head 10 horns. And so now his focus is zoomed in to those 10 horns. Verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. So while he's watching these 10 horns, three of them are shoved out of the way by an 11th horn. And this 11th horn is described as being little, but something happens. Behold, in this horn were eyes, like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. So this horn then gets little human eyes on it, and it has a big mouth that starts talking big about itself and against God, is what we'll find out in a little bit. So all of that is what he sees in his dream coming out of the sea. But he keeps watching in his dream. As I looked, thrones were placed. So he sees places of authority, seats of authority set up. And the Ancient of Days took his seat. Now, this Ancient of Days is just a name for God the Father. It becomes obvious as we continue with the vision here that it is God the Father distinct from God the Son. And you can hear in the name, Ancient of Days, someone that is older than time itself. And so that's God. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. So he's got white hair and a white beard. His throne was fiery flames. Its wheels were burning fire. So this throne is described as having wheels. And that might tempt you to think of a chariot. But I want you to now take in consideration other visions that are related to the throne of God. Things that we've seen not too long ago. And that would be the vision of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 1, as well as Ezekiel chapter 10. And what did we see there? We saw the throne of God on a crystalline platform above four cherubim, four-faced, four-winged angels. And what was between all four of those angels? You're right in your remembrance. The wheels within the wheels. The whirling wheels. And the glow that came from those wheels and from the throne certainly could have been described as being fiery. And so I think we may be seeing the exact same vision, just described slightly differently. And that these wheels here are the whirling wheels between the cherubim. Now, verse 10 says, a stream of fire issued and came out from before him. and thousands upon thousands served him, and 10,000s times 10,000 stood before him. Now, thousands of thousands, that's a way of talking about a very large number. Now, you could think 1,000 times 1,000, but that wouldn't be the only possibility here. It could be 9,999 times 9,999. So that's already a huge number. But we don't even stop there, because 10,000 times 10,000, that's not just talking about the base number. It could be 99,999 times 9,999, or 99,999. So we're talking about anywhere between millions and billions that are being described here. These are probably angelic figures that we're talking about, because this is an Old Testament image. Although, since the Son of Man is going to come up in the next part, it could be something past the atonement, in which case many of these figures could be the redeemed of the Lord already in the presence of the Father because of the Son. Just take it at this. This is God the Father on his holy throne, glowing and light everywhere, and he is attended by at least his holy angels and possibly even the holy host of the redeemed. And the court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. So what's the purpose of this throne? It is to get ready to deal with sin and rewards. Verse number 11. I looked then because the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. So this horn is talking, bragging, and it's talking down about God, talking down about the people of God, and bragging about itself until finally God destroys this beast that the horn was on. And then it is burned in the fires of judgment before his throne. Now, what about the other beasts? Verse 12, as for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, so they're not allowed to be in charge. But their lives were prolonged for a season and for a time. Now, those are indistinct. For how long is not clear from the passage here. Now, chapter 7, verse 13. I saw in the night visions. So he's still describing the exact same vision. And behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like the Son of Man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. Now, there is zero possibility of misunderstanding this passage. This is Jesus. This is Jesus at his second coming. This is Jesus who has redeemed by the blood of the Lamb the righteous saints of all ages for an eternal kingdom. This imagery is seen in the book of Revelation, but it is also quoted by Jesus in his trial before the Sanhedrin. It is actually what gets him condemned, because they tried and tried and tried to bring false witnesses to condemn him with in the Sanhedrin trial, and none of the false witnesses would agree with one another. And so the high priest finally says to Jesus, I order you, I adjure you by the name, by the Most Holy One. Tell us, are you the Son of the Most High? Are you the Holy One? And Jesus' response was, I am. Now that's the literal language, which borrows from the book of Exodus chapter 3, where God introduces himself as the one who is. I am whom I am. And so that by itself angered the priests, the high priest. But then Jesus goes on to say, and I tell you that hereafter you shall see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of glory. That is an allusion to this passage right here. And Jesus was telling them beyond a shadow of a doubt, I am the Messiah, I am the Son of Man, and I will be the one fulfilling Daniel chapter 7. I will be the one coming into the eternal kingdom, and all authority will be given to me by the Ancient of Days, which of course is God the Father. And that's when they ripped their clothes and condemned him to death and accused him of blasphemy. Now, it's not blasphemy if it's true, but that didn't suit their purposes at that point to accept him as the Messiah. So this passage is very importantly connected to Jesus, which then helps us kind of untangle all the other parts of it. Now, Daniel was not in a situation where he by himself could understand it. And so he's upset by everything he's just seen. He can see the good part of it at the end with the Messiah coming, but all of the rough stuff before that with the bragging of the horn, it's got Daniel in a tizzy. So verse 15 says, as for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all of this. So he goes to one of the angelic creatures in his vision and wants to know, what's this all about? Please explain it to me. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. Verse 17, these four great beasts are four kings who shall arise out of the earth. Now the kings here can also be described as kingdoms. So it's not just singular kings, it's actually the kingdoms that are associated with those kings. And we can decode all of these guys very easily. I will do it quickly now, and then we will come back next week and start with this again and do it with a little bit more depth. So the first animal out of the surf was the winged lion. And I already told you the winged lion was well known amongst the Babylonians because it represented their main goddess. In fact, the Ishtar Gate was decorated with winged lions. So the idea is clearly Babylon is represented here. And the kingdom of Babylon ends its existence because of a final braggadocious king who gets his wings clipped because of his pride. And that would be the guy mentioned at the beginning of this chapter. That would be Belshazzar. He is so sure of himself that when his kingdom is surrounded, when his capital city is surrounded by the Medes and the Persian army, he throws a party. And we'll talk about that later in the book of Daniel. So that kingdom, the Babylonian kingdom, is the winged lion that gets its wings clipped. The bear is the Medes and the Persians. It's lopsided. All of the representations of the Medo-Persian Empire is that it is it's an alliance between two unequal partners. First were the Medes, and then came the Persians, and the Persians were the more prominent partners. They became much more significant. So the bear is lopsided. Now it's got ribs in its mouth, which seems to represent how the Medes and the Persians took over three key areas during the time of their rise. But it's also told that it gets to chew up a lot of flesh, which it does until it runs into the next big empire, which is the leopard empire. The four wings and the four heads are connected to the fact that the Greek empire of Alexander the Great was broken ultimately into four portions. And so the number four is always key to the understanding of the ancient Macedonian Greek empire that spread into the Middle East. And its speed of overwhelming the Middle East under Alexander is certainly tied in with the speed of a leopard. The rest of it, I have to save until next week when we get back together into God's Word. Have a great Lord's Day, and make sure you worship well.